Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
Life.
Love.
And health.
In fairy tales, marriages last happily ever after. Well, science, however, tells us that wedded bliss has but a limited shelf life. American and European researchers tracked about 2,000 people who got married and stayed married over the course of 15 years. Now, the findings were really clear. Newlyweds enjoyed a big happiness boost that lasts on average for just 2 years. Then the special joy wears off and they're back where they started. At least in terms of happiness, these are findings from a recent study which has been confirmed by, well, other recent studies. I'm Christopher Springman and you're listening to Life, Love, and Health. Now the good news for the holiday season when families gather in various configurations is that if couples get past that 2-year slump and hang on for another couple of decades, they may well recover the excitement of the honeymoon period 18 to 20 years later when the children are gone. Well, that's the question I'm posing to our next guest, clinical psychologist Dr. Bridget Lank, who is also a certified sex addiction therapist and practices in San Rafael, California. Dr. Lank, welcome to Life, Love, and Health.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
What are your thoughts about new love and that short shelf life?
Well, new love is so exciting.
Oh,
it is
so
that
much
it's
fun.
That happiness boost all the time. You know, there is that part of the brain where novelty is just so excitability, you know, where there is a release of the neurotransmitter dopamine where everything is really pleasurable, it's exciting and it's new.
And newness and freshness is really one of the keys here. With all due respects to poets and pop radio songwriters, new love seems nearly as vulnerable to hedonic adaptation as a new job. Wait, let's back up. What is hedonic adaptation?
Well, I understand hedonic adaptation to be, you know, driven by the root of hedonism, which is that pleasure seeking, and that I'm adapting to it. My understanding would be that I actually might need more and more. If we think about it like a tolerance, you know, my happiness or pleasure meter, I might need more and more pleasure, more and more excitement to get the same desired effect. And so that newness where we're really looking at something different.
Well, as one of my favorite authors said, Raymond Chandler, the first kiss is magic. The second is intimate. The third is routine. How do you get people back on track? I don't want to wait 18 to 20 years to rediscover intimacy.
Well, I think that's what a lot of people say, you know, that the intimacy is gone and the intimacy is lost. And you know, it's come at a consequence of actually developing a family. And we've lost our coupleship. We've lost our partnering in favor of parenting.
You know, there's an old cliche, I'm surprised anyone ever has a second child. Which is, you know, an old joke, but there's probably a basis in truth. I mean, after people have a child, well, things change.
Things change greatly, and you know, the routine of parenting, and actually, one of the things that we really see start to shift is really the relationship between the mother and child. You know, I mean, breastfeeding might even be an example where there is that close emotional attachment that's being formed, you know, between mother and child, even through breastfeeding, where oxytocin, the attachment chemical, is released, and the partner feels other. The partner may feel rejected or dismissed or just kind of lower a person on the totem pole.
And besides, very often the partner is jealous of the physical intimacy that the child is having with mom. And then after breastfeeding, after a long day of looking after the child, there's seemingly little time left for the partner. You must experience this all the time in your practice when you finally sort out what the issues are.
I do experience that. And oftentimes there is that narcissistic injury, for lack of a better word, or a wounding that the partner does experience as a feeling physically rejected, but also emotionally rejected, and a type of competition for relational love with maternal love. And if ever I'm in competition with my partner, I cannot connect. And so oftentimes I will see patients disconnecting to find that perceived physical attraction somewhere else or that emotional closeness outside the home.
Our guest is Dr. Bridget Lank, a clinical psychologist who is also a certified sex addiction therapist who practices in San Rafael, California. You can learn more about Dr. Lank and her work at her website, www.drlank.com. You brought up a very, very interesting idea that people have a tendency, what's the word I'm looking for? To stray, to wander, to seek.
To, you know, act out. Mm-hmm.
To act out.
Mm-hmm.
And what form does that act out often take?
Well, ultimately, we know folks are acting out of reality. You know, they are acting out of reality in favor for fantasy. And so they may act out behaviorally in ways that I am creating an entire fantasy world to relieve and reduce and numb and avoid or escape the reality. And so people will act out sexually online, in real life, with prostitutes, but essentially creating an altered reality to escape from the painful feelings of rejection within the primary relationship.
But don't those folks understand that there are logical, predictable consequences of acting out? We see this all the time in the news with various celebrities, and most recently with General Petraeus, who began a relationship with the principal author of his biography, of, you know, very striking, very smart, highly motivated person, and they either fell in love or fell in lust. I can't quite figure that one out.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure he understood on some level that he was jeopardizing the integrity and the future of his relationship.
Well, I actually think that becomes a part of some folks' compulsive cycle, essentially, where I actually believe that I could thwart off consequences. And so, you know what? The excitability that comes with the risk, the efforts to engage in a secret fantasy life, keeping it in its own compartment, and the acquisition of something fantasy-driven actually becomes part of the arousal template for folks. So they may know the consequences in the back of their mind, but we see folks, you know, mildly dissociating from reality and going to great efforts to prevent consequence.
What's the old saying? It's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission.
It's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission. And so oftentimes people come to a place of forgiveness after a crisis where there has been consequence. But I think folks, maybe from a narcissistic perspective, that this won't happen to me or that I can prevent the consequence is part of this perceived power that actually drives this compulsive behavior.
In your practice, how often do people get back together, forgive each other, do their mea culpas, and move on?
You know, I see about 50% of folks really committing to do the work to stay together. I mean, essentially, people come into treatment, people come into psychotherapy at a state when the relationship is in crisis. And you actually cannot begin to do the close intimacy, rebuilding marital work until the crisis is stabilized. And in order to stabilize the crisis, obviously the threatening behavior to the relationship needs to stop. The trust needs to be restored. And oftentimes trust is rebuilt on the injured partner's timeline, you know, and so it takes quite a long time to stabilize these injuries.
One has to be very, very strong to make this work. Our guest has been Dr. Bridget Lank, a clinical psychologist who is also a certified sex addiction, therapist who practices in San Rafael, California. You can learn more about Dr. Lank and her work at her website, www.drlank.com. Bridget, it has been a joy having you in today discussing new love and the alleged short shelf life that may occur.
Thank you, Christopher.
I'm Christopher Springman. You're listening to Life, Love, and Health on Radio MD.